It's time for Supply Chain Now. Broadcasting live from the supply chain capital of the country, Atlanta, Georgia. Heard around the world, Supply Chain Now spotlights the best in all things supply chain. The people, the technologies, the best practices, and the critical issues of the day. And now, here are your hosts.
Hey, good morning. Scott Luton and Greg White with Supply Chain Now. Welcome to today's show. Greg, how you doing?
I'm doing great. How are you doing?
Doing fantastic. And, you know, this show has been in the works for a while. We're going to be chatting with a business leader from a company that's helping organizations make better and faster planning decisions these days in challenging years like 2020. So, Greg, you know we're going to be working really hard to improve our listeners' supply chain IQ, right?
Indeed. And you know this is one of my favorite topics. So I'm really looking forward to this.
Making planning, beautiful planning music here today. So stay
That's
tuned.
That's right.
More to come.
Wonder where you can have that made, planning music.
It's a thing.
Music to plan by.
More to come on our guests in just a minute. But quick programming note. Hey, if you enjoyed today's episode, be sure to check us out wherever you get your podcast from. You're going to want to subscribe so you don't miss conversations just like this. So with no further ado, let's welcome in our featured guests here today, Alex Prodhan, Product Strategy Leader with John Galt Solutions. Alex, good afternoon.
Hi, everyone. Good afternoon. Hi, Scott. Hi, Greg. Nice to be on the show. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, great to have you here.
Absolutely. We've really enjoyed kind of the pre-show conversations, learning more about your background and obviously the organization. And we're excited to share that with our audience. But, you know, Greg, we're going to start where we typically do. We're going to dive into business and a lot about planning. But for starters, let's get to know Alex a little bit better. So, Alex, tell us, you know, where are you from? And you got to give us an anecdote or two about your upbringing.
Yeah, sure. Well, I currently reside in Miami, Florida here in the U.S., but I actually grew up in Mexico City. So this is, a fun fact most people don't know. So my background, I was very fortunate to have be immersed both from a cultural perspective, the language. And so that's just a little bit about myself from my background perspective. I think in terms of something about my upbringing, coming from Mexico City, one of the big things for myself and my family every year is annually we would take this really big vacation to Orlando. And as part of this family vacation, just bear with me because I'm going somewhere with this story. It was my mom would rent out a car and we would go through the automated car wash machine, which was, you know, at the time, it was to me absolutely fascinating to see, you know, the machines, you know, scrubbing the cars down, the bubbles, the fans, the water. And I was just in awe as a young girl, right? You just don't see those things in Mexico. And I remember to me that just sparked my curiosity for technology, for innovation, for automation. So that's just a little bit about my background.
Love it.
And that is really cool.
Well, you know, we've been in some here recently where they've added, because probably it's so appealing, especially to kids, they've added fluorescent lighting and it adds like a disco element to the car wash. So maybe my kids will be as inspired as you were, Alex.
And multicolored soap. I can't lie. I sometimes just pay for the more expensive car wash just to get the cool colors.
That is right. Hey, it's the simple things in life. Hey, one more question before we dive into your professional journey a bit, Alex, is, you know, growing up in a great city, iconic world city like Mexico City, now living in Miami, what's the one food dish that you just can't quite get as it was growing up? What would that be?
So it's called tlacoyos. And what it is if you can almost imagine a thick tortilla made out of green corn that they, it's very similar to pita, where they open it up and they put inside refried beans, cream, sour cream, and cheese. And it is just, it melts in your mouth. It's delicious. So you really can't find that anywhere, not in your local Chipotle or Taco Bell, but highly suggest that if you ever make your way down there.
Sold. Sounds delicious. All right. So Greg, we could have followed that topic down for the next couple of hours. Probably.
I'm hungry. Let's
But let's dive into Alex's background a little bit more.
Yeah. Yeah, so we learned a little bit about you as a kid. So tell us a little bit about your fascinating professional history. I think people are going to be interested in kind of how you got to where you are.
Yeah, sure. Well, before joining John Galt Solution, I was at Gartner as a senior principal research analyst covering supply chain planning technology. And before that, I was leading demand planning for a company called IPC. It's a purchasing cooperative, the supply chain arm for Subway here in North America. And in that role, I was helping look at, for example, promotions, test concepts, any limited time offers for all the stores in North America. There's about 27,000 stores and about 63 distribution centers.
Wow. IPC, that sounds familiar. So that was supplies for all of the franchisees?
Correct.
Is that what it was?
Yeah, okay. Absolutely. Yeah, no, so we looked at all of the items. So if you want to think about all of the products, be it from the raw materials, right, tomatoes, lettuce, to equipment, to promotional items like kitty cups or the toys that you will buy whenever you're buying I don't want to call it a Happy Meal, but the equivalent of a Happy Meal at Subway.
Mm-hmm. Or the bags that those amazing chocolate chip cookies come in.
Uh-huh, exactly. Yes.
Yeah. Okay. Great. So, as you've gone through your career, anything in particular or anyone in particular that you feel like has really kind of helped shape your worldview or given you a eureka or pivotal moment?
Yeah. So maybe I'll start off with my job when I was at IPC for Subway. Let me take a step back there. I think one of the things that was great working there was, it gave me the opportunity to get my hands dirty wearing a lot of different hats in the supply chain and really understanding a lot of the interdependencies end to end. So understanding, for example, how marketing promotions would influence demand. I go back to, we had a promotion at the time, was called the Chicken Enchilada. So what it was a margin barbecue chicken with Fritos in a sub. And so it was supposed to be a promotion that would last about 3 months or so, but it went gangbusters and we ended up basically depleting all of our inventory in a matter of weeks. Mm. And what was really interesting was that was one of the ways, right, that we learned, and not that we hadn't done that before, but understanding all of the different moving parts. So now to go ahead and replenish, I need to go ahead and source the chicken, understand what are those lead times from production into the distribution center, even the raw materials, say for the barbecue sauce, if there is a proprietary recipe, what are those raw materials? What is the shelf life for that in different stages of production from raw materials to semi-state to finished goods, or even looking at, for example, the consumption rate might be different, right? So you might have different ratio of Fritos to the chicken. So that just gave me a really good appreciation for that ripple effect that you will see on all these different moving parts in the supply chain. In my more recent role at Gartner, I guess when I think about that eureka moment, one of the things I think about in terms of the role is kind of similar to a doctor. So what I mean by that is when you go to a doctor, right, you say, oh, you know, something hurts or I need help. So it would help advise clients in terms of how to look at what are their business needs and map them to a technology roadmap. And many times it would come with a question or a problem, and so it would help prescribe them that solution. But it's really not just about technology. It's really kind of broader. Your technology is only going to be as good as the processes you have in place. So going back to the analogy of a doctor, you know, it's a lifestyle choice, right? So you have to eat good, you have to exercise, and it's not just a prescription. Technology is just not going to be the end all, solve all. So I would say that it's being able to look at all of those different areas to ensure that it's not just a conversation about technology.
That's a really fantastic insight. I call that the technology paradox. People think you plug it in, your world changes, mm-hmm. right? And in truth, technology is usually just a more rapid expression of however you do your business today. And it can and often does take over an aspect of the business and make that more efficient or even change the process to be more effective. But it's not, as you said, it's not the end all be all. You have to understand the dynamics of the enterprise that surround that and be ready to adapt those as well.
Mm-hmm. You're absolutely right. There's that careful orchestration that you need to have between, many people refer to it as three main areas, but I go down to four. So you have the people, the process, the data, and the technology. Back in my role at Gartner, I would see many companies starting off on their journey or maybe midway through their journey, coming out of Excel spreadsheets, and they wouldn't necessarily focus on the foundational stuff first, which becomes really, really important. So they're trying to leapfrog, do maybe more advanced capabilities, but you really need to go ahead and focus on each one of those different pillars to ensure that there's that orchestration or that transformation of the business. And that's something I think that's a lot harder to do than write a check and buy technology.
Right.
I'm changing my lexicon right now because I'm certainly one of those folks that immediately talk about and go to people, process, technology, but that data pillar, especially in this day and age, you can't leave it out. And I love that intentional call out there. So you just changed my life, Alex. Did you know that? You just changed my life.
No, I didn't.
He's going to have to use that as a pivotal moment next time he gets interviewed. Okay. And I have to acknowledge one thing that I think I have seen people conduct this process in Subway stores that I think is absolute brilliance. And I don't know if Subway led the way or followed their customers on this, but I worked near a Subway and I would occasionally go get lunch early or breakfast late or whatever. What I saw that I just felt was absolutely brilliant was people in the construction trade, they would go in and buy their breakfast and their lunch at Subway and take it away. I know that sounds crazy, but if you think about it, that there is a certain expeditiousness, certain efficiency and brilliance in that for me. I just thought, what a great idea to be able to buy your breakfast and lunch at a place where your lunch is still fresh when it's time, right?
Mm-hmm. Save all those footsteps. Right.
Well, yeah. And I mean, it's not like you can go buy a Whopper and wait 4 hours to eat it, right? It's different with a sub sandwich. So I don't know. I know. I sometimes fall in love with really, really simple things, Alex. So, all right. So let's talk about what you are doing today now that we've gone through Subway and its service to the world and Gartner and its service to technology and retail and distribution and manufacturing. Let's talk about what you're doing these days at John Galt. So your title is Product Strategy Leader. Sometimes title doesn't exactly describe or completely describe what someone does. So tell us a little bit about a day in the life.
Yeah, sure. So I'm very excited to be working at John Galt Solutions with a phenomenal team to help basically solve customers' problems. We're a great team. We're a lot of fun and have a really cool job. And you're right. Sometimes the title is, what exactly do you do? So what I do is I work very closely with the team here at John Galt Solutions, be it either from the research and development side to the services side that help implement all of our customers, sales and marketing, as well as our customers, and work very closely with all of these different groups of people to understand, what do they need, not just today, but also into the future as well, and how we can respond faster to a lot of these market changes. So when I think back to, for example, what is that common denominator, right, across all the different team members at our company? It's this idea of we all love to solve problems, right? Everyone is a problem solver. So this applies, I think, to not just our customers, but also to everyone in our organization. That's a little bit in terms of what I guess is a day in the life of what I do.
Thank you. That's good. I mean, you're basically helping to define what the tech or what the cumulative solution, not just the tech, but the cumulative solution needs to solve in the marketplace today. And so tell us a couple things. One, the question that everyone is asking, who is John Galt? Totally kidding. But I totally get and love right. the reference there. But tell us a little bit about the kind of solutions that John Galt provides, and you know, what segments of the supply chain you play in, because I think it's really interesting how broad, how focused your technology is, but what a broad cross-section of companies that you work with.
Yeah. So to answer the first question in terms of me specifically, what I will do is I will look at all of our different customers and work with all of the different team members to understand, you know, from a product roadmap development, market trends, obviously competitive trends as well, and help to continue to improve the product on an ongoing iterative fashion. In terms of the company, we are a supply chain planning software company that serves customers across all industries. It's really cross-industry that are really facing complex supply chain planning challenges. So when you think about, you know, what in terms of who we are, right, in our heart and all that we do is we just focus on supply chain planning. So some of the ways that we do this is through our solutions. So for example, if you think about demand planning or replenishment planning, supply planning, going into production and sales and operations planning, all powered by machine learning and artificial intelligence. So that is, you know, one of the ways that we support our customers. And then also in terms of, you know, when we look back at our DNA, we support also, we do, one of our core pillars is also innovation. And I can go into a little bit more detail, but does that help to explain a little bit about John Galt Solutions?
Yeah. I think it gives people a good perspective on what you do and where you fit. But, and your solution is used by retailers mm-hmm. and manufacturers.
And distributors as well.
And distributors. So. Yep. Every tier in the supply chain uses it, and they use it to plan their finished goods and sourced materials that make up those finished goods as well, correct?
Yeah, that's correct. So if you want to think about it all the way from understanding what is that production, going from production into placing any type of orders, where should I place my inventory, what is the right cadence in terms of the replenishment, getting a good enough demand plan. So linking all of this together across different planning horizons and then also bringing in that financial component as well. So to your point, yes, absolutely. Kind of think about it end to end, being able to link, align, and collaborate and orchestrate all of your different planning activities. And one of the things I think I also want to mention about the company is I talked a little bit about our core pillar is innovation. We have the John Galt Innovation Labs, which is our R&D engine. Think of it as it's the heart of our innovation. And it also focuses on constantly exploring new ideas, challenging the norms. We're always working very closely with our partners to assess, you know, what are the things that they need to think about going into the future, whether we're doing prototyping or looking at testing out a new concept. So there's a lot of really interesting work that team also does as well.
Love it. I love challenge. You know, in a year like this, I would argue anytime, but certainly in 2020, challenging every single norm. We've all been caught across industry with some different blind spots that we weren't, you know, they're blind spots because we don't know they're there. So they've really surfaced in many ways this year.
And I think another important thing, we're frequently wondering, how do you use AI? How do you use machine learning? This is a great example of how, because it's a great opportunity to learn about the tendencies or the influences of the actors on the product, the customers that buy it. And also on the environment in which it is moved or purchased, right? Because there are all kinds of constraints and scheduling limitations and things like that AI can help a ton with discerning. Under what conditions could X product be late, right?
Yep. Or
what makes a customer buy A?
And you mentioned discerning, one of our favorite words here at Supply Chain Now. And
a whole
so
week
important.
To think of that.
So Alex, you know, I appreciate kind of how you've set the table with what the organization does and the expertise there and what you're doing out in the industry and of course, where you spend your time. I think our listeners are really going to learn and benefit a lot more from this kind of this next segment. As you know, we love our top three, top five lists, and we may not have a perfect list here today, but with this next segment of the conversation, we really want to pick your brain on, you know, what are your top three lessons learned from, you know, recent months, especially from a supply chain planning perspective? Please share.
So one of our top focuses is, and I think this is not only for us, but it's navigating COVID-19, kind of this new world that we're in. And so one of the things that we're seeing a lot in terms of maybe those top lessons is the importance of demand planning. And taking that even a step further, really being able to bring in data from outside data signals to help get a more accurate view of that demand shorter in. And so that's just something that we're seeing is becoming even more important, is no longer, you know, can you be only focused on the four walls of your organization, but how do you bring in all of these different demand signals, be it IoT, weather, POS, and so on. So let me give you an example. One of our customers recently, Ready Ice, they are one of the largest manufacturers of ice in the United States. They added IoT sensors to the actual store ice box. So if you ever go into like a Walmart or 7-Eleven, and I guess you would have to peek into the ice box and see if there's a sensor in there, but they're able to measure how full the ice box is throughout the day and record real-time inventory levels at the store level. So it's actually really cool what they're doing. And it's really important for their business as that lets them forecast down to not only an hourly level, but also a store level. And so what they do, for example, in that case, is that they'll combine the IoT sensors, the POS data that they're getting, and we're building machine learning models with them to get an extremely precise view in real time of how much inventory there is in these ice boxes, which further also helps them optimize their transportation routes. So this just gives you an idea of the kind of work that we're doing, but what we're seeing across in different industries in terms of this idea of data, demand signals, how important it is, especially in that shorter term horizon. And when you think about all the disruption that's happening today with stores that are opening, that are closing, or even shifting in consumer preferences, that's a big impact that we're seeing right there.
Love it. I mean, imagine, Greg, all the different benefits. I mean, when she shared that IoT, being able to really have the visibility into that location's icebox, think about all the miles you can save by not sending a truck if ice is, you know, if inventory is there. Or think about, you know, especially in, you know, you spent the last week in Florida, those hot summers there where Alex lives, you know, if you have a cooler that breaks down, and I'm sure it probably monitors the temperature as well so that you protect your product, right? So many different ways that level of visibility can help an enterprise, huh?
Having just loaded up on ice every day for 6 days, right? I can think about the importance of that because we were going to various islands and it's not easy to get the product there. Sometimes the product is made there, right? Sometimes they have this massive cooler ice maker thing that you then create your own bag from or whatever. So yeah, I get the importance of it and I really appreciate it. It's an easy thing. That particular thing is an easy thing for anyone to visualize, I would bet, because those coolers are at the front of every convenience store and grocery store on the planet. And almost everyone has to have experienced the disappointment of opening that cooler and there being no ice in it.
Yes. Right?
When you need it, you really need it. I mean, you're on your way somewhere.
That's right. That's what a great example. And I'll echo what Greg shared there. Everyone can relate. And I love those types of examples, Alex. All right. So let's keep driving. What else, when you look back in recent months, what are some other lessons learned your team's had?
Yeah. The other lesson learned that we're seeing a lot is the idea of automation. And what I mean by that is, you know, how, if you think about the world today, right? Decisions need to be made a lot faster. I mean, COVID, let's use that example because we're all so familiar with it. You know, you're having to recalculate your network maybe weekly, some cases even daily during the initial COVID phases And that trying to figure out, you know, where are, you know, where are my suppliers, where kind of capacity do I have? And so where I'm going with this is that companies are having to do a lot more with less. So they have less time. They have less resources. Many companies, unfortunately, have less capital today. And they still need to make decisions with a lot of confidence. So this idea of how can I automate what can be automatable and help to go ahead and be able to, from some companies, right, that might be something as simple as get me out of spreadsheet hell. For other companies that maybe are a little bit more advanced, right, that could be a little bit more such as, you know, automating their purchase order. So let me give you a really good example. We're working with another one of our great customers. They are in the business of distributing propane for commercial or home businesses. And they have over, I want to say about 200,000 customers. And what they're doing is they're bringing in automatically telemetry readings as well as POS data signals for the customers to help to gauge not only inventory levels, but they're also reordering, they're automating all of their purchase orders. And they're doing this with only two folks, which is absolutely, I mean, imagine just being able to really, you know, do all of this work automatically, really with just two people there supervising, you know, if there's any type of outlier that might come up. But this broader theme of how do, can we automate what can be automatable is something that we're hearing a lot more, especially given some of the things that I talked about, you know, less time, less resources.
Love that. 200,000 customers basically being supported by two team members. And you know, Greg, one of the things as she was describing that, as Alex was describing that, is think of all the resources you can pull and reapply and other, you know, priorities in the business or other problems or other fires or other opportunities for that matter.
I mean, that's a tremendous amount of efficiency. Also, I can't help but note the cookout theme that we seem to be moving down. Ice, propane. Is charcoal next, Alex?
No, I hadn't thought about that.
Food?
Definitely a big food theme today.
But yeah, I mean, that is important because the theme of automating the automatable is important. We still have this issue that we had even before going into COVID, where 10,000 working people a day are leaving the workforce. So as we have this huge generational transition, we need to, and the incoming workforce expects us to automate what is automatable, because if it can be done by a machine, they have been brought up to have it be done by a machine. That's a vast difference from the way the workforce has been viewed in even the fairly recent past. So that's an important principle.
Yeah, I think what you're seeing and you were talking about is kind of the rise of the digital native. So, you know, you might consider more traditional planners that grew up in a more apprenticeship type of environment where you go into the Excel spreadsheets and you understand all the moving processes versus maybe these newer generations that are coming in and expect kind of that very environment to be kind of that digital native environment. So they grew up with apps. I go back to my daughter, and the other day she had the control remote and she was speaking into it to be able to change the channel. And I was like, I mean, I remember growing up and you know, had those old control remotes with a couple of knobs and the wire. Right. So absolutely, it's just a shift in how end users are interacting with technology.
I remember being the remote control. Hey, kid, get up and change a channel.
You were the control remote.
Yeah. Right.
And just how quickly, you know, with my three kids and watch them interact with technology and see just how quickly they learn how to use an app or device or what have you. And then they're off to the races. And, you know, gosh, I'm slower than most, but man, it takes me a while to figure out how to use the new remote controls that you're referencing, Alex. But you know, it's a really neat point in time that we're all living with and experiencing.
It's really not unlike the Industrial Revolution. It has a lot to do with when you were introduced to these things, right? I mean, people are used to automated production, and you know, they or they became used to it, or they retired. And it's not dissimilar with digital tools.
That's right? Good point.
So
just look, they look a little different.
Yeah, it's a natural progression.
Yeah.
Right. I think we all would have liked to have had it.
Yeah. All right. So Alex, you know, as we kind of wrap up this segment where we're getting some of your lessons learned from planning perspective here on Supply Chain Now, what else comes to mind in terms of, you know, what your team's been experiencing?
You know, I think just to go back to maybe finishing those top three things that we're seeing, I would say in the last year or so, this idea of getting more visibility, being able to get visibility into the supply chain end-to-end. And we talk about visibility, you know, that looks at not only those real-time insights into what's happening in the physical supply chain and being able to, you know, look at that in the software, but also, you know, being able to do what-if scenarios, a lot of simulation to understand, well, what are the different trade-offs as I'm looking across revenue, cost, margin, service levels, profitability and whatnot, and also being able to monitor your supply chain and get the analytics behind it. So we're seeing a lot of customers saying, well, we want to get more visibility into our supply chain. And so I think that broad area translates into kind of some of the different areas that I talked about.
Yeah, agreed. You know, Greg, kind of hearing Alex make that last point there, My mind went to what we were talking about earlier today with how the supply chain education profession, and we all have plenty of conversations about how the pandemic environment has really impacted supply chains themselves and how work gets done. But it was the first time I'd really spent time diving into how educating the practitioners that will be hitting, you know, global supply chains in the years to come, the tweaks they're making based on what they've been experiencing. And Alex, when you lay that out, we've got to change everything, basically, you know?
Yeah. And it's because everyone was caught off guard, that visibility or lack thereof became immediately apparent. And now people know where to look, and if not what to look for, at least to look for indicators that a problem has arisen or is arising or may arise. And that became elevated really, really rapidly, right? Yeah. That goes to the discussion we have around resilience frequently and responsiveness, right? You know, I'm noticing here that we're not talking a whole lot about forecasting, and I really appreciate that, by the way, coming from that world. I feel like forecasting is overrated. It's overemphasized. The truth is there is no, Scott, you say it so well, but essentially the message is there is no such thing as an accurate forecast. It's just levels of inaccuracy.
Mm. Yep.
And when you're in a planning and a responsiveness responsive environment, you have to focus on that responsiveness, expecting that something will go wrong with the forecast. And that's what we're talking about here, being able to intervene or preempt or see trouble coming or respond rapidly to it. And that's where that visibility comes into play very strongly.
And I think to your point, Greg, you know, a good starting point is getting a good demand plan, but then that signal goes into the supply side, right? Into the replenishment, into your inventory, but it's really how to get that visibility. It's really a conversation about having that end-to-end supply chain. So being able to go from the demand into the supply, bringing in, and I have that financial alignment, but being able to really get a way that you can link together everything and look at the trade-offs, which is absolutely critical when we think about not just today's disruption with COVID, but there's always going to be some type of disruption, right? Is the hurricane, if there's some type of a port closure. I mean, we saw it recently with the tsunami that would happened out in Asia. I think it was about a year and a half, 2 years ago. And then obviously the challenges that it caused with you know, the high tech industry. So it's something that I think it's constantly going to be present. It's just to what degree are you willing or you should be able to start to think about reducing uncertainty and mitigating or mitigating uncertainty and reducing risk.
Yeah, that is the key, mitigating uncertainty. because you have to plan for failure. You have to plan for the forecast to be inaccurate. You have to plan for some appropriate level of risk, and you have to build that into your plan. They're my two of my favorite quotes about planning are, one, the thing you learn if you've ever taken any sort of consulting education is the first thing you do once you've built a plan is change it. And and also the great philosopher Mike Tyson, everyone has a plan until they get punched in the face.
Right.
Right. And that's what you have to also plan for that. What do I do when Mike Tyson punches me in the face? Mm-hmm. Right.
Yep. Yes.
There is constant disruption, and that's a big part of the reason why supply chain management is a profession, right? We handle the disruption, the constant disruption.
Yeah.
So I love what both of y'all shared there. So Alex, if you're ready, I'd like to take the conversation. It's been global perspective already, but I'd love to take it a step further and get you, you know, kind of maybe beyond the planning realm. And really when you think of global supply chain and you know, you've already mentioned some of the things that's been taking place in recent years, so much, right? And we could broadcast 24/7 around the corner and still, you know, just getting the surface level topics. What else is out there, topics wise, development wise, or disruption wise, perhaps, that you're really tracking more than others right now?
So one of the things that comes to mind is e-commerce. You know, thinking about that broader disruption or the trends that we're seeing with consumers, you know, consumer habits are changing really, really quick, and their shopping behaviors as well. And so what we're seeing is that companies, and this is cross-industry, I mean, I'm talking to companies from typical retailers to those companies that are more B2B, they are now either looking to support e-commerce where maybe in the past they didn't, or they're being forced to as well. So, you know, kind of a fun fact or fun stat was in June of 2020, about 28% of all sales were online. When I saw that kind of blew my mind, because I mean, I am quite an online shopper, but to think that 30% almost of all sales are online is huge. It's a big shift for a lot of companies when they look at things such as, well, maybe, you know, a significant percentage of their sales are not coming online. Or how do I look at my product packaging, right? So instead of going ahead and selling, you know, only one, now I got to bundle them into three. Or how do I begin to think about protecting certain key customers like the Amazons of the world or Kohl's or whoever it may be in their online fulfillment channels. So e-commerce is something that's starting to come up a lot more aside from maybe that broader retail category. The other thing that we're seeing a lot is this idea of the product portfolio. So when you think about in the past, right, and this actually be really interesting thing to see what is going on from a trend perspective, but in the past, there were, when you think about the product portfolio, you know, there would be thousands, hundreds of SKUs out there. What we're seeing now is, for example, for consumer product goods, is that they're skinning down, they're rationalizing the number of products versus in the past, you know, it was all about personalization. In food and beverage, we're also seeing this as well, where this is impacting, you know, looking at their production lines, at their transportation modes, at their supplier lead times. So the shift that's happening right now with the product portfolios, things are starting to skin down a lot. And this also is impacting a lot, for example, new product introductions. So in the past, how companies would go to market is also shifting. So let me give you an example. I was talking to one of our customers. They do, they're popular kids and adults, also fruit snacks company. And traditionally around this time of year, they might have launched a new product to support back to school. Or, you know, and that packaging might be, you know, very different than what they have now. They're seeing a shift in that. So that causes them to change, you know, when they're looking at when are they going to go to market with a new product or what are the type of products now that they should go ahead and market because of the changes in consumer behavior. So we're seeing that a lot. Yeah. And so, you know, those are two big ones that come up. And I think also just in general, right? when you think about the market, where it is today is in the past, so let's say 10 years ago, 15 years ago, a lot of the supply chain planning decisions might have been done much slower. There might have been maybe linear, it might have been more of a linear decision.
Right.
And what we're seeing nowadays, there's a lot more complexity. There's a lot more bi-direction of decisions. Everyone wants to look at visibility. So this theme of complexity keeps on coming up. And so that's something that I think as we look into going into the future is how can we help companies simplify those decisions using technology, helping them automate and bringing in all of this extra data signals that they're getting, moving parts, changes with lead times, all of this complexity that's coming out there. You know, that's a theme just across all industries that we're seeing.
The complexity off the charts. I mean, I look back, you know, we're all reminded of days gone by, whether it's a Facebook reminder that hits from 3 years ago or, you know, now that all the events have gone virtual, you know, thinking of past association events, you name it. But man, just the amount, the level of complexity and the different types of challenges that exist due to the pandemic dynamics and of course a lot more. You know, the industry continues to evolve and it has been, you know, I look forward, Greg and Alex, you know, 10 years, 20 years down the road, all the business cases that will be studied in you know, business schools and supply chain programs based on this period we are working through right now. Greg, I'm sure complexity can often be found between your two ears pretty regularly these days, huh?
You know, it's funny, as Alex, as you were reflecting on that, I was thinking about how many old ideas are becoming new again. We were talking about store centers being built for BOPIS, where they're basically a buy online, pick up in store, where the store is essentially a showroom and you go pick up, you go there solely to pick up what you've ordered online or maybe to sample it in the store. And it makes me think of chains like Service Merchandise, right? It makes me think of how e-commerce is essentially the new mail order and Sears and JCPenney and things like that. And how I was working in retail in the early days of e-commerce, how we created this sort of false wall between e-commerce and traditional store operations for a multitude of reasons we won't go into here. But those false walls and that failure to recognize and study and capitalize on history have been laid bare by this crisis. And I think we can find, you know, what it makes me think is we can find a lot of expertise, a lot of opportunity, a lot of resolution in looking at some of what we've learned, some of the good of what we've learned from Service Merchandise or from Sears and selling you a home via email or via mail order, I should say. And things like that. And we need to recognize and apply those principles. And I don't just mean the tactical principles of delivery or of listing it in a catalog, but I mean the principle that includes the structures within an organization that facilitate that. Hmm. Because they could both sell you something in a store in Chicago or out of the warehouse or even the store in Chicago and ship it to you by wagon train to California, right? So there are a lot of lessons there, and I think we would serve ourselves well to think about what has really caused the issues with commerce these days and to take away some of those things that have separated traditional store commerce from e-commerce. To me, I'm using the term, it's just commerce. Yeah. I know, because the marketplace doesn't recognize that, and if you've got something to sell, you have to acknowledge the delineation there, but the truth is, it is just commerce, and it should be as simple as that.
Mm-hmm. I think the lines are getting blurred a lot.
Yeah.
So and COVID has been a catalyst to changing how consumers perhaps are participating in this. But to your point, whether I know, click it and pick it up or get it shipped or whatever, all these different forms. But the idea of how can companies get closer to that consumer and really understanding what motivates them. To your point about we're seeing kind of the old be new again, you know, the resurgence, for example, of vendor managed inventory.
Yes.
I guess, you know, that's another big thing we're seeing out there right now is so many companies right now are under a lot of pressure to deliver cost savings, increase customer service, and VMI is becoming a new hot topic all over again. And we're supporting many, many of our customers as they're implementing kind of their VMI.
That's another great observation. I had kind of registered that, but I hadn't really thought through that. But you're right. I can see where that's becoming very, very big.
I bet in general, you're seeing heightened demand for what John Galt Solutions brings to the table, given what kind of the dynamics both of y'all are speaking to. You know, not to be dramatic, but I'm not sure if there's ever been ever exists a greater need to move faster and make better, more sound decisions than right now. So I bet y'all are really busy making the donuts, Alex, at John Galt Solutions.
We are very busy, good busy. You know, we are growing globally. We're hiring. So, you know, especially during today's time, you know, we are hiring, we're a growing company, and we are making those donuts to your point. So, yes.
Well, you know, to be able to meet with someone, you know, I love circling back to your background, to have the background that you have where you've done it. You've sat in the chairs
right. For
large organizations. And then of course, with your Gartner background, to be able to benchmark and see how not only how you did it, but all the benchmarking conversations I bet you're a part of. So to bring that to John Galt Solutions and the conversations you're having with clients and prospective clients, I'm sure that's extremely valuable. So it doesn't surprise me that you are in growth mode. With that in mind, let's make sure that folks and our listeners know how to connect with you and whether they're in the market for better, faster decisions or if they're in the market for a new career.
Yeah.
Where can folks go to connect with John Galt?
They can go to our website, johngalt.com. They can connect with us through LinkedIn. For anyone who's listening, I would love to also connect with you through LinkedIn and you know, see how we can help solve your supply chain planning problems. So, yeah, absolutely. Would love to connect.
Outstanding. And Greg, you know, we're going to make it easy, right? We're going to drop that direct link in the show notes. We're after that one click, right?
That's right.
As often as we can.
Yeah.
Well, you know, Alex, you're also making us really hungry with, what was that dish you referenced on the front end here? That's
tlacoyos.
Yes. So let's all set aside some time on our calendar. Sooner rather than later, we'll make a trip and get authentic cuisine there in Mexico City.
I'm all for that.
I am too.
Yes.
Well, Greg, really enjoying the conversation here. We've been chatting with Alex Pradhan, product strategy leader with John Galt Solutions. Really enjoyed the perspective that she is sharing and, you know, a lot of the best practices and observations they've gleaned here in recent months.
Look, if any space in supply chain was brought to the forefront, if any particular solution space was brought to the forefront, it is forecasting and planning and responsive application of those plans. And we're seeing it. I mean, you know, this space is very hot. The needs are apparent. And because so many consumer attributes, so many consumer methodologies are changing, and because so many companies have to change to adapt to that, it's inevitable that these kind of solutions are brought to the forefront. And we've been saying this for 6 months now. If you thought you could do it on Excel spreadsheets before, you might want to consider a new career. I mean, the fact is the ability to manage your supply chain on spreadsheets and with manual processes and paperwork, that has been laid bare by this. Mm-hmm. It's just not efficient. It's just not effective, and it's just not rapid enough. And these kind of solutions give you precisely that.
That's right. And if you want to break out of spreadsheet hell, as Alex put it.
I
Alex,
love I'm
completely
that, by the way. Yeah.
Stealing that from you. But it sounds like Alex Prodhan with John Galt Solutions could be a great resource. So, Alex, really appreciate your time. Thanks so much for joining us here today. Looking forward to the live stream up next with you and maybe a colleague, where our audience, I'm sure, are going to have some great questions for you.
Thank you very much for having me on your show today.
Yeah, thank you.
Thanks so much, Alex. Again, Alex Prodhan with John Galt Solutions, where she serves as product strategy leader. Greg, really enjoyed this episode. Looking forward to the next show and to our audience. Hey, if you enjoyed today's show, check us out wherever you get your podcast from. Of course, you can also check out supplychainnowradio.com for the full slate, the full inventory of shows featuring great thought leaders just like Alex here with John Galt. On behalf of Greg White and the whole Supply Chain Now team, Scott Luton here. Hey, do good, give forward, and be the change that's needed. And on that note, we'll see you next time here on Supply Chain Now. Thanks, everybody.